Five things that come to your mind when you hear Jar Jar Binks.
Comic relief. Where was he in episode 2? Where was he in episode 3? And whatever happened to Jar Jar? And will we ever see any more of Jar Jar?
Welcome to the DL Gaming. What? Who's this guy? Oh my God, dude. He can't. Who breathes like that? Do you know anyone who breathes like that in real life? That's pretty crazy.
I think that's Emilio, right?
That's Emilio. Yeah. In a alcohol-induced coma, oxygen barely making it to his lungs.
Breathing into the mic. Yeah. No, we don't have Emilio or Nick breathing into the mics this week. Just me and Christian.
Just me and Bobby. And we're going to hit you with some Star Wars because this is the DL Gaming Podcast. And we didn't play Star Wars Outlaws, did we, Bobby? Haven't got that one yet, eh?
We did not. You know what? It's hard for me to buy a game like that expensive. I don't know why. Like, I'm an adult. I have money. But I, for some reason, I refuse to pay for games full price when they come out. And it's kind of nice to be part of everything going on and like everybody experiencing it at the same time. Like, that's a really cool feeling, but you do pay a premium for that. And I really wanted to see how this played out, and kind of a surprise, but not really. It actually is pretty well received. I think it's looking pretty good.
Yeah. There are some, influential people that I trust their opinion of. The marketing head for Larian said he played it on a flight over like a 12-hour flight or something, and he said he couldn't put it down. I want to play this game all the time. It's actually super good. Sorry, like, because it's easy to hate on, you know. We kind of talked about it even a little bit. Another AAA game from Ubisoft. I wonder how that'll go. Seems like it went pretty good, so maybe I will also shell out the 110 decals to fucking play this game.
110. Wow, that's a lot of money. Yeah, you guys pay too much for games up there. I've been watching some streams of it, but this is a hard game to really understand just by watching a little bit of a stream. You really have to commit to it and watch a lot of someone playing this to really kind of get a feel for it. And I guess it seems like a Star Wars Assassin's Creed, which isn't really a bad thing. I mean, those are good games, right?
Yeah, and a couple of people in our Discord picked it up. They're talking about that it was pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, I would love to kind of lose myself in a Star Wars universe that looks good, that plays nice. It's checking all the boxes. I'll even start off Ubisoft Play. Is that what that application is called? UbiPlay?
Yeah. And for the record, I don't mind it. A lot of people complain about jumping through another launcher, but whatever. It's not that bad. And they sell their games for a lot cheaper on there. Obviously not this one, but any of their other games you can find for a fraction of the price if you get the version that only works with their launcher instead of the Steam version or something else. But yeah, I may check it out at some point. The only thing is, like, I really don't play a lot of single player games anymore, or don't stick with them at least. I'll check them out. I'll play them a little bit, but I really do enjoy not just multiplayer, but co-op games these days.
Yeah, it's and yet when you play co-op games, you're often still pretty silent, pretty silent kind of co-op game player, Bobby. I don't know.
Not a big talker.
Not a big talker.
That's why I'm on a podcast.
Yeah. What are we plugging this week?
This week we're going to be plugging our YouTube channel. So you've been putting up some reels, some small highlights of some of our episodes. It's a lot to ask somebody to watch an entire episode, especially when it goes on for like an hour and a half. I get that people don't want to check that out on YouTube. So we're trying to push that short form content, maybe get a few more people noticing us. And, you know, usually like what the best part of the episode, you'll cut out and put on there something interesting that somebody said.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil the episode with like the best part. Cause oftentimes the best part is like, you know, like a contextual discussion and we're like zombifying an earlier part of the podcast and making fun of it. And it's just better if you listen to the whole thing. But I'd say like the most interesting opinions that we have, like you have quite a few opinions. You're a very opinionated guy, apparently, according to the reels I put up anyways, which are just like segments of you. Yeah, so come to YouTube, check those out. And we have a special episode this week. We're going to be talking about our lives through the years of Star Wars. So, Bobby, if you could start us off in your early childhood, what did you grow up playing in the 50s or however?
I mean, not that far away. My first game is from 1983.
Now, oh, God damn.
That was the year I was born. So I wasn't playing this when I came out the womb, but I did play a lot of Atari games when I was younger. We had an Atari 2600. That was the first console I remember. And we had a ton of games. They're still sitting in my parents' garage, a whole box of them. One of these days, I'm going to go grab them. And I don't know if I'll play them again. But they weren't that fun, Atari games. They were very simple. They were very difficult to understand visually, because they were so blocky and you just couldn't do much with the sound and the graphics. So it was really difficult to find a good one. But in the later years, and 83 is kind of the later year for Atari. This is a year before the NES comes out. In fact, they got pretty good. And one of those games, 1983, Return of the Jedi on the Atari 2600. This game looked really good. You could understand what you were supposed to do and what the objectives were. It was very simple. All you did was fly around as the Millennium Falcon, just like in a 2D space. You're shooting up TIE interceptors. This is the final battle of that Death Star 2 or whatever they called it. But you're shooting up TIE interceptors, and then you see these little holes open in this grid above you that you can jump into, and it takes you into hyperspace. And then you go to the Death Star 2 where you have to chip away at it. And I was trying to think of like, what's a game that this is similar to? And there's like, it's such a similar mechanic, but I can't think of any game to compare it to. I remember games where you just like knock the ball and it chips away at these blocks. Like I played that on like the old Apple machines when I was in middle school. It's kind of like that. You have to shoot at the Death Star 2, chip away till you get to the blinking core, and then you shoot it and then it blows up. And then you do the same thing over and over again. You go back to shooting TIE interceptors. And like most Atari games, the point is to get the high score, because that's all we did with video games back then, is just who gets the most points. And that was exciting enough.
How many times would you say you have chipped away and blown up the core on the Death Star 2 in Return of the Jedi?
Probably not many. Because like these Atari games, they're pretty difficult. Do you know what an Atari controller looks like?
I could Google it and educate myself like a good functioning. Well,
I'll give you a hint. I mean, I'll tell you, it's not like a big surprise. It's got one joystick and one button, and that's it. So
that's what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, that's all we needed back then. I don't know. It was all right. I must have like blown it up once and been like, oh, that was cool. And then when I realized you had to do it again, it probably wasn't very exciting. You know, Atari games, you played them for like 15 minutes and then you went outside and like fell off a tree or something. That's what you did back in the 80s. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of staying power with that game, but I still have fond memories of it. And I don't know. I'm not going to go back and play it. I'll like watch a YouTube video for 30 seconds, be like, oh, that was fun. But, I don't know. That was, I think the first Star Wars game I ever played.
Okay, that's cool. My first Star Wars game is many, many years later. In 1997, I think this was the first one that I can remember playing. My parents played, they would have like their friends over, and I remember as a kid watching them play Star Wars games on the TV. Someone would bring up their game console, but I can't remember what games those were. Maybe it was these famous Atari games. I have no idea. But the first one that I played myself was as a young kid, Star Wars X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. So my auntie had this game at her house, and she had the full flight stick. And I remember asking her, what's that for? Like, what's that thing at the computer? What is that? And she goes, oh, we play Windows. I forget the name. What are those actual Windows flight simulators? We play those games, and we play Star Wars X-Wings versus TIE Fighter. And I love Star Wars, so I asked her if I could play. She said, sure, hop up. I'll get you some books you can sit on so that you can actually see the screen and see, like, handle the flight stick. And I remember, like, every time we would go over to their house, I would just, like, leave and, like, turn on the computer and try to, like, silently play this game and, like, not interact with anyone. But other than that, I completely forget everything about this game. Like, I assume it had a story. Like, all I remember is shooting bad guys down, but there's got to be something more to that. So I was looking at, maybe this is one of the ones I want to go back to because I had such a good time with Squadrons. And there's an X-Wing Alliance, which I think X-Wing Alliance is the one they released that had X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, X-Wing and TIE Fighter all wrapped into one and kind of remastered for the time. It came out in 1999. And there's a mod for that, new UI, balance, and VR support. And it's 50 gigabytes total. And from the videos I saw on ModDB, it looks great. So maybe that is the one I will try next May when we, you know, give up our dignity and go back into Star Wars games and play some of the ones that we like. But yeah, this mod looks awesome. So yeah, did you play any of the X-Wing versus TIE Fighter games, Bobby?
A little bit, but not much. Those were actually very highly regarded among my group of friends back when I was younger. I didn't have them, but I knew people that did. I remember installing it with like floppy disks on a computer right at one point. This is like the original TIE Fighter. But there was TIE Fighter. Then I think X-Wing came after it. Then there was X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, which was the one that you're talking about. But yeah, TIE Fighter is the one that I remember the most. And if you're going to play that game now, the best place to get it is GOG.com. The Steam version had a lot of issues at first. I think it's better now, but, with any of these old games, GOG.com's the way to go. But yeah, you know me, I'm not much of a flight sim guy or anything,
that requires a flight stick, and yeah, then you'd have to give up your dignity and all sorts of problems with giving up your dignity. So
yeah.
What else do you have from your early childhood?
So I've got another one here that a lot of people probably remember. So Star Wars on the NES from 1991. This game, a friend of mine had it, and my friends and I were big Star Wars nerds as kids, especially when I started getting into the CCG later, like in the early high school years, but even very young. And what was exciting about this game was it was the entire Star Wars movie, A New Hope, in video game format. They had everything. They had the opening crawl in this game, the whole thing.
Wow.
Like just like in the movie, like you sit there and watch it before you play a video game.
Okay. Like,
yeah.
It really set the scene. Was it good? Mm-hmm. Did you? Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then you play through this action platformer type game, through everything that happens in episode 4. They start you off in Tatooine and you spend way too much time going through these cave levels, which are just kind of like filler, I guess. And they're really annoying, but whatever. Eventually you get to the sand crawler and it's a lot bigger on the inside and you bumble around there, but you go everywhere. The Mos Eisley spaceport, you meet up with Han Solo. There's cut scenes where they say lines from the movies and you go to the, and mostly it's an action platformer, but then they switch over to other types of gameplay at certain points. Like, when you're going through the asteroid field, you have to fly around, dodge the asteroids, which they aren't really asteroids, are they? I mean, those are chunks of Alderaan. I mean, that's like, Not really an asteroid. That's somebody's home planet. Yeah. But yeah, then you go into the Death Star and they have like even these, they're kind of like boss fights. For some reason, the tractor beam controls, you know, the ones that Obi-Wan goes and turns off.
Yeah.
Well, in this video game, you got to go fight it like it's a boss battle.
Makes sense. I love that. Well, how did the tractor beam levers attack you? Like, what were you bossing against?
We had to shoot it, and then there were like little guns that came out of the wall, I think, and shot at you. So you just had to like dance around and dodge them while you shot it. Yeah, they made it exciting. They punched it up, you know.
That's
should
cool.
have been in. Should have been in
should
the
have
movie.
Should have been in the movie. Should have been in the movie.
Yeah, and then of course I think you have a fight with the Dianoga in the trash compactor. That's
did you have
there.
To look that up, or did you know Dianoga?
No, dude, I know that from the card game. Yeah, nobody played that card, but yeah. And then the Death Star attack run is interesting because it goes into this top down, like, flight game. I don't know. I'm not sure. There's other games out there that are like that, but I don't know how to describe it. You're looking top down, you're flying upwards and you're shooting things. But really what was interesting about this is it didn't have that final moment, I think, of like shooting the torpedoes into the shaft. You just kind of reach the end and it's like, boom, game over. You did it. And all you had to do was just dodge a bunch of stuff in the trench.
Okay. So, yeah. Wait, because my experience with Star Wars games is like they play up that moment way too much. Like it's all about the trench run. It's all about getting those torpedoes in. And this game did everything except that. I think that's kind of funny in a way.
I don't know. Just right at the end. I don't know. I rarely made it very far in this game. I hardly ever made it off of Tatooine. So I don't think I ever beat it. But when I was watching a playthrough of it, I was like, how does this game end? I'm curious. And yeah, it just kind of like fades to black. Like right, it seems like in the middle of this level, it just fades to black and then it cuts to Death Star blowing up. So, you know, I guess you just can picture what happened in your mind.
Okay.
But yeah, and they made a ton of these games.
So this was the
Star
Wars.
Yeah. This was the original Star Wars one. They made one for every movie. And then when the Super Nintendo came out, they redid these for the Super Nintendo with better graphics, but essentially the same gameplay. And they were all right. These games, you can't expect much from them. Like every game on the Nintendo was just like an action platformer. What was really cool though, and I always appreciated, is that you could switch between characters. When you met up with Han Solo, he became part of your team. And then anywhere in the level where you were, you just press pause, go to the menu, switch to a different character, and then play as that character.
I feel like this is groundbreaking. 1991, they had this technology before I was born, Bobby. This is crazy. This is crazy.
Yeah. It's a good time. Now, this is a game I might go back and play on an emulator.
I was just going to ask you. Okay, that would be fun. I would love to have a... Because it's probably not very long, right? Maybe like 3 hours, 4 hours?
Depends on how long it takes you to get past the levels. But yeah, I can't... If you played straight through it, it probably wouldn't take you more than an hour.
You could do that in a day. I hear you have nothing but time to go back to Star Wars NES games and just play them in one playthrough. Okay, cool. Let's move on down to when we were teenagers. So, I mean, in my early childhood, I think I bummed around on a lot of games, but nothing really stuck. But when I was a teenager, I really started to become interested in games that were a little bit more complex. I've been playing on like a GameCube before that, a little bit of a Wii, and then the original Xbox based on like what me and my friends had. And then back to PC as a teenager, I again went to my auntie's house and my uncle was always playing this game, this grand strategy game. And then he would pause it when we, you know, actually went through the door and he'd say hi and then he'd visit with us. But I always saw the pause screen and I was wondering, what is that game? It was Star Wars Rebellion. And I asked him, I begged him if I could play it because it looks so cool. Because he's like, oh, these are all the planets you take over and you play as the Empire or the Rebellion. And, you know, the Rebels can hide their base, but I'm the Empire and I have to find it. And I just, that was like blowing my mind how cool that was. And he would only let me borrow the CD if I read the entire manual, which was 167 pages. And I don't think he expected me to actually read it because I was like 12 or 13. And... So I borrowed the manual and I read it. I remember reading it at night. I had like a little nightlight and I was like trying to, this is how the game works. And he didn't believe me. So he like pop quizzed me. He's like, okay, what are the types of fighters that the Empire has to field in this game? What is like the main resource called? And I aced the pop quiz. And so he gave me the CD and it was my first kind of like grand strategy game. I don't know if I knew what I was doing like at all. Like I remember being so overwhelmed because I didn't think I understood that you could pause the game, which is very important now. Now I pause it all the time. But back then I just would kind of let it play. And as you let it play, the computer is doing stuff while you are just kind of learning how to play the game as a child, as a 12-year-old. I remember like looking up the missions in the manual. You could take Luke Skywalker to Jedi Padawan to Jedi Knight, and you'd have to do like a bunch of specific things for that to happen. And like, that would be my focus. And then like the Empire by that time had taken over like 3/4 of the galaxy, and I was basically fucked, but I had a great time. And nothing still scratches an itch like Star Wars Rebellion, Bobby. I think I bring up this game maybe too often. Most notably, I beat your ass in it so badly you don't even want to try a rematch. It's embarrassing.
Oh boy.
But I know this is a game that you have played and presumably have liked. So what did you...
Yeah, I enjoyed Star Wars Rebellion. It was very different than a lot of the games I had played at the time. I mean, maybe... this might have been right around the time I was playing one of the very early Age of Empires, like the free one you could play on the Zone. But I remember seeing this in a computer store when I was young. And the box art of this has the... that image from the first Star Wars movie with the Death Star or the Star Destroyer flying overhead and that really low angle shot.
Yeah.
And it, something about it just looked very intriguing. And the game was super cheap. I'm pretty sure this game was not very popular when it came out. Like nobody was buying it up. I think because it was like strictly a PC game and strategy games were a little more niche back then. But yeah, I got this one and I remember really spending a lot of time on it and not quite understanding like how the game worked because it is very confusing and I didn't read the giant manual, but
that game was yeah. The game.
Yeah. And it didn't really have any multiplayer, but I found someone, maybe through like a Yahoo chat room or something, but I found somebody, or maybe it was on the Zone, I don't know, or someone I played other games with that had this game too. And we set up a multiplayer and we played it, it was such a long game that we had to play it in chunks, but we'd play for like hours. And the next week on like Saturday, I'd see like, oh, is this guy on? And you know, back then this is like the late '90s and the internet, you don't know who anybody is. It's all very weird. It is just like, this guy was pretty much a stranger. Like it isn't like it is now, obviously, but I think the biggest thing we all forget is like how little communication. You just typed to people and you had a screen name and that was it. Like nobody had all their stuff on like Instagram or social media. That didn't exist. There was nobody used voice chat like at all. Like that was almost non-existent. So these were just like complete strangers. But yeah, so this mysterious person, we would play this game from like in sessions, and we never did finish because the game takes a long time to beat or to play to the like to conclude unless you're playing against the rebels and you move away from, you're playing the Empire and you move away from your base and leave it unprotected.
You move the whole Imperial fleet off Coruscant, leaving it wide open.
Well, I didn't know that I had to like that was the win condition.
I know, dude. And then I throw that in your face every single like just like basically a bug or like some stupid bullshit.
Apparently, Coruscant is integral to the Empire.
Apparently, who knew? Yeah. Not me.
Doesn't seem that important to me.
I remember the cutscenes in this game were. I mean, going back and playing the game, they're horrible. But at the time, like if you win as the rebel, you get this scene of Coruscant and you like knock the big Imperial sigil off like the Jedi temple or something. And all the people are cheering in the streets. And then it takes you all throughout the galaxy and people are all happy. That was really cool for me as a kid to see that because it was like, I was getting these snapshots of different parts of the galaxy. And then, you know, I was like, you know, the Star Wars universe is so much bigger than the movies. And I think at that time I was just starting to like grapple or understand that and become interested in like the comics and the books. And that was a great way to like, you know, have that effect on me through this game.
There's a lot of cool things about this game. I mean, it had characters from books. It had Grand Admiral Thrawn, the Nograi. Like, I don't know how you pronounce that. I just always called them in my head when I read it. I just thought it was the Nograi. It's like Noghri.
Oh, you know, I always thought Nagiri, but I have no idea.
Okay, that's get easy.
We're getting into problematic territory.
You never saw that back then. To see that in a video game, I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. But yeah, that was cool. And there's a lot of really cool things about that game. That's another game that I would go back and play, but it is rather time consuming. And I don't think there's ever really been a game quite like it. Maybe some mods out there that have kind of done the same thing, or I don't know. You would know better than me. I don't play enough strategy games.
Empire at War doesn't really hit the same spot for whatever reason. It's like in Star Wars Rebellion, when you were doing a fleet battle, do you remember that half the screen was the 3D fleet battle and the other half was like this analog control movements? And to move your ships, you would have to like select them all and do like, oh, I'm going to do a fighter screen for my entire fleet, or I want my capital ship to move up. I have to click my capital ship and then go to this other screen and press like aggressive stance. And you could manually move them around the battlefield, but you had to like if I wanted my capital ship to move up 20 meters, I would have to like click the forward button like 20 times, you know, like it was, it just slowed everything down. And I think maybe that's what we're missing. Like Star Wars battles and films and media, up until the new stuff, I guess they were like long drawn out battles. Like if you think about the battle of, the second Death Star, ships are pummeling each other out there for what? 30 minutes, 40 minutes. They're out there. And you assume that like the shields can take a certain amount of damage before they go down. And in Star Wars Rebellion or Star Wars Empire at War, everything just felt super quick. Like, oh, this is just an aside to get back to, you know, the grand strategy part of the game. Whereas Star Wars Rebellion felt very much like, no, the battle part of the game is like a strategic part of the grand strategy game itself. Like you can do cool tactics here. And I didn't feel that way.
Just hit that autocomplete button. Bloop.
Blasphemy! Blasphemy! Oh my God, you don't play every Star Wars Rebellion.
Pretty sure now. I got this one. Autocomplete.
Next time we go back to a Bobby, please be the Rebels, you know? I think.
Okay. I mean, that's what I always played when I played the game. I never played the Empire. Like, in all Star Wars games, by the way, like I always play the Rebels. I'm a good guy, you know?
You're a good guy.
But are the Rebels really that good? Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's gray, right?
Oh, that's why you won't watch Star Wars Andor, because it's a gray Star Wars and plays with themes.
I don't get that moral ambiguity out of my Star Wars, bro. I like it black and white. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. What do you got?
I've got Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight. I bring this game up a lot on the podcast, maybe not so much recently. I try to ease off it, but this was the defining game of my childhood and possibly my life. This game, it's more than just a game to me. It's the reason that I got into PC gaming, and it's the reason I got into computers in general, really. You know, I really owe it all to this singular game. I played this game. I must have beaten this game so many times. Every couple of years, I'll go back and play through it. Sometimes I'll even stream it, play it on hard mode, play it on medium, whatever. Like I play this game all the time. But back in the day, I loved the multiplayer. I played so much of it. This was when, and I realized as I played the multiplayer, like at some point I was like, if I'm going to be good at this, I'm going to have to learn to use the mouse to move around, because up until that point, I was just using the keyboard like an idiot. It forced me to start using the mouse, in first person shooters. Cause like in Doom, you know, Doom 2, you didn't use the mouse, or Wolfenstein, like you used the keyboard. But yeah, so I mean, lots of things happen for me while playing this game. This is the first time that I ever really got into modding a game as well. Modding and just the community in general. I posted some videos of some of my mod. I made levels, I made skins, I made like modifications to files that would change the way weapons work, like all sorts of stuff. And I put some video up, maybe you'll post this somewhere, but it was some of the skins and the lightsabers I made. So I wasn't like super creative. My levels I was kind of proud of, but what I think my big contribution was to the modding community was my lightning lightsabers. I made these lightsabers that had a lightning pattern, and then in the game it would flicker like lightning. Now, of course, this is a very old game, so it doesn't look all that fancy, but it was cool at the time. The skins that I made were nothing very impressive. I would just take Mandalores and like recolor parts of them. So back in the day, I was using GIMP, which is the GNU image manipulation program. Like, if anyone remembers that, it was like a free version of Photoshop. It still exists today. It's out there and it's a great program. It's what it gets used on Linux quite a bit, but I was using that to modify these files, but I wasn't really like an artist. I couldn't draw something or create something from nothing. So a lot of my skins were pieced together. And my memory's a little fuzzy here. So I don't know how much of this I should take credit for, but I did have a Space Ghost skin that was pretty popular. Space Ghost, if you don't know who that is, look him up. He was this cartoon character from like, I don't know, the 60s. And then in the 90s, he kind of had this resurgence on Cartoon Network, Space Ghost, Coast to Coast, where he would interview people, you know, him, Brack, like the whole gang. But yeah, he'd run around with his cape and his mask and a lightsaber. And yeah, it was a good time, man. And then, God, the community. So like, this is the first time I ever joined a guild, or they called them clans. And
yeah, you know, what clan was it? Do you remember the name by chance?
I don't.
No,
I don't. It was. I mean, I was in a couple different clans. There's one called right. The Taxmen, and I don't know why we're called the Taxmen, but our web page had like a little jingle from the Beatles song, like the Taxman or something like that. I remember it was very big to have Adobe Flash on your web page. Like, you go to your web page and like a little Adobe Flash would play, and then it's like, oh, here's our members and here's this and that. But yeah, and then it was great just being a part of a community. You know, people hitting you up on ICQ. Anyone remember that? No.
Yeah. Okay. The little, I remember song. ICQ.
Yeah. Playing these games, like, it was tough because we would play on the Zone, which the zone.net was this Microsoft's website for gaming. You could play all sorts of games there. I played Rainbow Six there. I played Age of Empires there. They had a free game called Ants that was actually pretty fun that I would play on there. But mostly I would play this game, and I can't remember how many people you could have in a game, but it wasn't a whole lot. But yeah, just so many great memories, like vivid memories of playing the multiplayer of this game with all these strangers from just around the world.
That's awesome, yeah. Dude. Why did you get into modding in the first place?
Because like this was the only game I was playing, and I was just really into it, and I saw the cool stuff that people were doing, like the levels they were making, the modifications, and the modding and like the hacking kind of got blurred sometimes. They had room specially for like, it's okay to have hacks in here. So I would do a lot of that stuff too, you know, make my railgun fire like 50 shots in 1 second or something ridiculous. And, you know, you wouldn't take that into a regular game cause you'd get booted, but it was fun to play around with that stuff. But, you know, my levels, they were really good. You know, when I read that book, Masters of Doom, with about John Carmack and John Romero, and they talked about the developers and the level creators they had. One of the more famous ones was American McGee, who went on to make his own games. But then they talked about like a few of their other people that worked for them and made levels, and they talked about how some were more just like run and gun fun type of stuff, and some of them were more cerebral, and I really enjoyed like the more cerebral type levels. Like, if you've never made a map in a game, it's such a cool experience because you think out every little thing and you're like, okay, this person's gonna want to get here because that's where the good gun is, but then I'm gonna set these traps up that somebody else can set to get them. Like, you have to make it a very contentious point where there's a lot of danger or there's a risk involved to getting like into this area because that's where the good weapons or power-ups are, you know, things like that. The last level that I never finished was an aquarium, and I made a mistake. Like, the best levels were the outdoor levels, and all my levels were indoor because it was just easier. But my last one that I was working on, I found this script that would make these spiral staircases that I thought was really cool. So I was putting those in, and I had this, it was like an aquarium, and it had like, I had like the, the cannon, like the most powerful weapon in this pool where like these giant fish were, it was like really hard to get to. But if you got it, then, you know, you just run the game at that point. If you got this, the pulse cannon. But yeah, I wish I would have saved the files to that. Like the modding tools are still out there. Sometimes I even think of just modding this game again, just making another level. No one's going to play it, but it would be cool.
Late in the night, yeah. eyes wide awake, dreaming, seeing your level on the roof of above your bed as you plan it out. No, that's awesome. That's awesome that you got into modding here. My modding experience was more on Warcraft 3, and I feel like they supplied an editor that was fairly robust. And I don't think I realized that at that time when people were modding other games, they were using far more rudimentary tools provided by the developers and much more like thinking outside the box and like messing around with the files themselves, which I never got into. So, you know, on your Steam page, there's like on your current Steam page, don't you have some uploads of mods that you've done or some pictures of art that you've done for this game? I could have sworn. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't. I have one screenshot that actually gets upvoted a lot from this game. There's a secret in the second level. I think it's the second level where you can find Max from Sam and Max.
Okay.
Max is the rabbit, right? I think that one's the rabbit.
You're talking to a wall. I don't know who Max or Sam are.
Okay. Yeah. Sam and Max were these LucasArts games, like these adventure games back in the day. But yeah, there's a level where if you get into one of the buildings through a very circuitous route, you'll find the rabbit from the other game in there. And I've got a screenshot of that. People love it. Big hit.
Oh, what a, you were like the Statue of Liberty for this game, dude. You were lighting the way for, yeah. So I was playing in my teenager years, Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds, which released in 2001. And it is the Age of Empires, but with a Star Wars skin, like exactly the same game loop as Age of Empires, you know, even the same amount of resource types, just called something different. Same sort of like, you know, the purple resource is gold and that's for like your high-end fighters and your upgrades and food. Obviously that's what you buy units for, you know, like nothing really hugely changing from the normal Age of Empires timeline, except for flying units, which I thought were amazing. You know, that was my favorite thing, get a bunch of flying units. They acted just like ground units, nothing super special about it. But my friend across the street, me and good old Josh, we would take turns playing. We only had one copy of the game, so we would take turns on the same computer playing the game, and he would play a level and then I would play a level and he would watch and then he would, and man, it's kind of sad that stuff, you know, it wasn't by design. I think no, we would much have preferred us to have our own copies, but computers were expensive, games were expensive, and it just wasn't as normalized. It was much more normal to go over to a friend's house and watch them play a game and actually get a lot of enjoyment from that than I think it is now. And I still remember multiple great times I had looking over Josh's shoulder as he completed a mission. And one of the ones that he still makes fun of me about is on the Naboo arc, because the Naboo are a faction. So if you play through the campaign, you go through like the Trade Federation taking over the planet. And at the very end, you have the Trade Federation army who has like captured the main square in Theed in Naboo. And what bothered me about this game was like the pretty patterns and the sharpness from like Star Wars wasn't present in Star Wars Battlegrounds, because it was like an RTS Age of Empires game, and like what things looked like didn't really matter. It was more like, you know, the unit types and stuff and about the combat. So I spent so long lining up our troops into these like parade formation patterns, because in the level Palpatine, or not Palpatine, but New Gunray comes down and he's in the middle. And I spent so long doing that the campaign timed me out right as he was flying down, right as I had gotten the parade set up and I did the final objective, and we lost the campaign, and it was like this long fucking mission, and we had to redo the entire mission because I had spent like 5 minutes lining up our troops and lines. Anyways, if that says anything about me as a person who plays games, I think it does. I think that's a That's a window into my psyche. But this game had like every major faction. It even had the Wookiees. And again, it was like this other hook of like, there's more to Star Wars than the movies. You know, there's these games and they're cool, but they don't really have these storylines, but they're hinting at these storylines, right? If you played the Wookiee faction in Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds, it talked all about how they were enslaved by the Empire. And I thought that was really interesting. I don't remember Chewbacca from the films being did they ever say explicitly that he was like a slave of the Empire at any time? Or was that always something that the books came up with afterwards?
I don't know. If we're going by the books, I don't know. But if we're going by the Han Solo movie, then he was captured by the Empire. I don't know if he was...
Well, in the expanded Legends universe, the like Kashyyyk, like the Wookiees are basically used as slave labor because they're big and the Empire thinks they're dumb, you know? They like work on starfighters and stuff. And I later read the Han Solo trilogy books, which were really good, all about how Han Solo and Chewbacca eventually met up. Han Solo was like this star Imperial pilot from like this poor family on Corellia. And he wanted to like make it out of the hole and he was good at piloting. So he joined the Imperial Navy. And on his final test, he kind of realizes that the Empire is using the Wookiees as slaves. Like they're always in the separate part of this facility and he doesn't really interact with them. And then he breaks Chewbacca out because Chewbacca is the person who works on his X-Wing. And I thought that was so cool. Someone sacrificing what they want to do the better good. But that, me discovering that story, I think came from this game directly because it had the Wookiees as a faction. Yeah. Anyways, Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds, Bobby, another game you've played. Did you find anything cool and different about it, Age of Empires? Because you never played this game when it came out, right?
I think I did. And I was like, well, this is just Age of Empires with a Star Wars skin.
Yeah.
And I was deeply committed to Age of Empires.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. The last game I played as a teenager, unfortunately, forever burned into my psyche, knowledge that I could never get rid of, taking up valuable space in my brain, which has a finite capacity, is Star Wars Galaxies and Empire Divided, which came out in 2003. And I think I did start to play it right at 2003 or maybe 2004, because I remember playing the original version of the game, the pre-CU, as it was called, with the 32 professions. And then when World of Warcraft came out, that took the world by storm and they changed the game to more mirror WoW. So you had like 9 professions. You couldn't, there was no like skill pass. It was like, you were locked in by your class basically, instead of having like the sandbox world of being able to choose your direction, which is why I was drawn to the game in the first place. I saw the cover art again, cover art, really important in a game store. It just had Star Wars Galaxies and the galaxy around it. And then you opened the box and it showed you all the professions you could be. And I remember reading, wait, weaponsmith, armorsmith, what's that about? That's crazy. So I begged my mom to get this, not knowing that it was an MMO. I thought this was a single player like RPG. And not knowing that there was a monthly subscription cost. So I installed the game. There's 4 CDs and I go to load it up. And then I have to go back to my poor mother and ask her, Mom, please, can we do a subscription? And she's like, a subscription? What? Why would you do that? There's so many games where you don't need a subscription. But we had just spent all this money on the game and I had ripped the box up. So I don't think the store was going to take it back. And so she's like, okay, we'll do it for a couple months and just see if you like it. And then if you want to go on further than that, we'll figure something out, which was like, whatever. I had to like shovel the walk and instead of getting money, it would go to my Star Wars Galaxies subscription, which was cool. When I was a kid, Bobby, this will shock you, that I didn't play to min-max. Are you shocked by this?
I don't think a lot of us were aware of that when we were younger.
No, not at all. Hey, and now are we too aware of it? Do you think? Where's the imagination, I guess is what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to have a game like this because that's anybody who has any experience playing these types of games, that's immediately where they go. It's just like, all right, what is the best use of my time here? Which, I mean, it kind of takes away that sense of discovery, but I understand why people do it.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was a pistolier. And I had the Naboo blaster that Padme uses that shoots green bullets. And I thought that was the coolest shit ever. I spent so many credits to get that from a weaponsmith named Jazletta. Jazletta, if you're out there listening, thank you. You signed all the weapons you sold, J-A-Z-Z. And that's how I remember that I had your gun, because I used it for like 4 years of four of my formative years that are burned into my brain. And I was also a scout and a crafter. So I would go out and I would harvest all these animal meats with my pistolier as my combat profession. And then I'd craft little things and sell them to people, and I'd walk around. And I don't know if people were just humoring me, because this was still not optimal at all. This is like the least optimal build you could do for a character. But I remember like running into a bunch of people and just like, oh yeah, you need some Valyrian brandy? Don't worry about that. That's what I made because I'm a scout pistolier. Kind of a cool guy on the block. My house that I had would have all my different meats lined up in a row, Bobby, and I'd have like the good quality ones on one side and the poor quality ones on the other. And then, you know, just so someone could browse. It was so cool. My most formative memory from this game is losing a swoop race. People would organize these races where they would put these player houses all over the planet. And to prove that you went to the house, you would have to buy an item from their vendor that they named like Swoop Race Item 4. And then when you got back to the original start of the swoop race, whoever did that the fastest would win the prize. So there was a little known bug that you could bug out the vendor for the person who came before you if you put a bunch of spaces in the search criteria of the vendor and press enter. It would take the vendor like a couple of minutes to restart. So you could buy your item, then you could press spacebar, enter, and leave, and then the next person would be stuck there. So that was the swoop race meta, by the way. Whoever got there, which was total bullshit. But I remember being so angry at this one guy. I like sent him a slash tell, you know, through the comm links. And I was like, you think you're cool. You think you're the fastest swooper. I had you beat. I was a second behind you. Anyways, that was my teenage years. Too much time on Star Wars Galaxies, but really this was me discovering the Star Wars universe, I think, as a whole, and getting into some of the comics and books, which is cool. Any takeaways, Bobby, from your teenage years in Star Wars land?
No, not many. I mean, that was probably the point in my life where I was most into Star Wars. And it's different than it is now, because you had the movies, and then if you wanted to find out anything more about Star Wars, there were some books out there or comic books. So, and those were like, I don't know. I didn't really, a lot of the books I read, but the comic books I could never get into, like a lot of the stuff that took place like thousands and thousands of years before all the normal Star Wars stuff. It didn't seem like Star Wars to me, but now it's just, there's so much Star Wars out there. Like I wish I was a kid again so I could properly enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, what surprised me looking at the games released in, by year released, is that they used to release, like there was like a golden age of Star Wars games, and sure, not all of them were good, but some of them were fucking amazing, you know, like Knights of the Old Republic, Star Wars, like beloved Star Wars game, all the Starfighter games. Like there's so many that we didn't mention, you know, Star Wars Obi-Wan, Star Wars Pod Racer. And I'm looking at the list now, and there's, you know, there hasn't been, until Star Wars Outlaws, I don't think there's been like a Star Wars title that really stood out for a long time. Like Star Wars Battlefront 2 was probably the last one before that.
Well, I think Jedi Survivor and the other one were pretty popular too.
Oh, you're right. Of course. Yeah. I didn't get super into those games, so I've got like a black hole in my knowledge, which takes us to being adults and playing Star Wars games. So Star Wars Battlefront, Bobby, 2015 it released, and I was so excited. I was 22. I was living I was living out of my house, but I have roommates who had an Xbox, and I spent big money for this game. Big money that I didn't have, and I was so disappointed because I had loved the original Star Wars Battlefront growing up. Where there was no awesome campaign in Star Wars Battlefront. There was no cool mission types. There was none of the 1v1 galactic contention, which was like a grand strategy game that they put into like an FPS, which I thought was super cool. And it just didn't feel that good to play the game. Like something was off. It looked really good. It looked awesome, but it just felt kind of meh. And I think that was my first experience buying a game with my own money and being like super disappointed by it and then not being able to return it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't remember this one at all. I played the 2017 Battlefront. That was Battlefront 2, I believe. And okay. I played a little bit of the original one that came out like a decade or two earlier. But not much. I kind of got the gist of it. Like, okay, you just run around, you shoot people in a Star Wars universe. It's very like a big, large battle and you're just a small piece in it. I don't know. I didn't really like that all that much, but yeah, the Battlefront games, I've talked about it before, but for some reason I got really into the 2017 Battlefront 2 game. Like during, I think it was like around COVID times, I was like, you know what, this is actually kind of fun, but yeah. In that like weird kind of arcadey way.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. As an adult, Bobby, you playing Star Wars games?
Not that much. So when I got older, like in my early 20s, I really didn't play. I don't know if I played, I think my gaming kind of dipped a little bit during this. I was strictly PC gaming at the time and probably not gaming like as much as I do now, but I was playing Republic Commando, and I've talked about this a lot when we talked about Star Wars games back in May. This one came up. We played it, so you're familiar with it now. And this they put a lot of effort into this game. And at the time, I don't think I recognized or appreciated it. But when we went back and played it, especially with the mods, I was like, this actually is a really good game. And a lot of people apparently agree because the reviews on Steam are very positive. It's like 95% or something like that.
Yeah. It's those fucking Gregorian chants. They're so good.
I mean,
good.
The music, the sound effects, the Foley effects, like everything they put into this game was just incredible. Like they really put all their creativity and the technology into the game. There were some things like for some reason I cannot let this go, but I played a lot of multiplayer in this game, and it's a first person shooter, by the way. Republic Commando, first person shooter. You play as a clone and you're the commander of a squad. So you had AI teammates that you would direct around. And at the time it seemed a little clunky, but upon replaying it, I think I knew better how to deal with my AI teammates and use them to the best of their advantage or the best of their abilities. And it actually like was a pretty cool system. Now the game had multiplayer. And of course, back then I just loved multiplayer, especially first person shooters. This game, I felt really suffered in the multiplayer, and that's something that you aren't going to get. Nobody's playing multiplayer Republic Commando these days. So that part of the game just doesn't exist anymore. So I think everyone remembers the good part, the single player campaign, but the multiplayer really suffered. And I think that's why I had somewhat of a negative opinion of this game back in the day. The melee was, this has the weakest melee I've ever seen in any multiplayer game ever. You could punch somebody, and when you punch somebody as a clone trooper, a blade would come out like Wolverine, and then you'd like stab punch them, and you'd do that like 10 times before they would die. Like it was ridiculous. Usually you make melee
The clone armor, Bobby. Impenetrable, I guess so. The vibro knuckle.
Well, I mean, if they're a Trandoshan and they're not wearing, or a Trandoshan or whatever, however you pronounce that, but they aren't wearing armor. You should be able to slice right through them, but no, not the case.
Scaly exterior keeps them safe.
Got that Godzilla skin. Yeah. But you expect, like, if you get a melee attack, like that's kind of a hard thing to do. So you expect it to do a lot of damage. And in most games, it does more damage than it probably should. In like Battlefield games, you'll break into an animation and it'll do a finishing move. But to have such a weak melee, just I always bring it up, and like nobody cares, but I keep bringing it up. It's like that one sticking point.
10 melee shots. You don't understand how frustrating that was. An unarmored Trandoshan.
And they didn't have any fun modes. They just had like deathmatch and team deathmatch. The maps were all right. So dude, you need a little more creativity in the multiplayer games. The Jedi Knight games always had some fun modes. They had capture the flag and I think a few other modes. And in the expansion, the DLC for Jedi Knight Mysteries of the Sith, they had this one called Capture the Y-Salamari. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but Y-Salamiri, it's a lizard in the Star Wars universe. I don't know. That was fun. There was carbonite guns. There was interesting weapons. I just felt like the weapons in Republic Commando weren't like all that interesting or different, but I don't know. It is a good game though. Like the single player, if you go back and play it, it's like a generic first person shooter. It's like almost similar to a Call of Duty game around that time, but it's Star Wars and it's just done really well.
Yeah. And if you're going into it blind, the music will blow. It blew my mind. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Why did this go epic. So hard? They didn't have to, they really didn't have to bring out the 82 person choir for this, but they did. In my adult life, Bobby, I found the greatest joy in mods, just trying to see if someone has already made this game a Star Wars game. So like Prison Architect, you know, you can now run an Imperial Detention Center. By the way, why isn't that a game already? I feel like that's a cool idea. You can play as like a rebel trying to escape or something. But Prison Architect, you design and run the Imperial Detention Center. In Stellaris, you play as any faction in the entire galaxy in a grand strategy game in Stellaris, reskinned to Star Wars. Super satisfying with like custom mechanics and the music. And I think they even have some cutscenes in there from the movies. And you can even play as these space dinos called the Siru. Bobby, do you know anything about the Siru?
No.
The Siru, S-S-I-R-U-U. Siru? Anyways, look up a picture of them someday. They're literally look like dinosaurs with guns, dude. They're so ridiculous. And their ships are powered with the living essence of other organics. So like, they're like these meat eating, obviously dino guys, but they just abduct you and then sap your life into their ships. And they love abducting Jedi because of course the life essence of a Jedi, Bobby. I mean, the Metachlorian count super high. So you could even play this faction in Stellaris, Star Wars, which was cool. And then of course Homeworld, which, you know, Empire at War, a little bit what it was missing, and maybe it didn't even need this, but 3D movement. Because the 3D movement in the Homeworld games always added a level of tactics, you know, because you would have armor that got weaker the more you like attacked one side. And the Empire at War games didn't have any of that. You could target subsystems in Empire at War, but in Homeworld was just a way better tactical combat experience. So the Homeworld Star Wars mod is awesome. I've sunk many hours into that. I don't know. Pitsed around on those like the Jedi Survivor games, but nothing I don't think in my adult life has really caught my attention like it did when I was a kid. You know, unfortunately, I'm still kind of looking to the next thing, I guess.
Maybe Star Wars Outlaws.
Maybe Star Wars Outlaws, dude, which, I mean, we can talk about it a little bit. We talked about it at the beginning, but what are the chances, you know? What? Tell me the odds.
Ooh, what, never like, tell me the odds.
Yeah, this is just us being fucking huge Star Wars nerds for like an hour and a bit.
I don't know. I don't know. I look at Jedi, what was the first one? Survivor?
Yeah, Jedi Survivor.
Mm-hmm. I played that one almost all the way through. Which is kind of unusual for me to do for a single player game, but it was really well done. It was a Star Wars game. So I don't know. I could have the same experience with Outlaws once I have a sale on it or something and I have the time, I may pick it up and really enjoy it. But I'd say the odds are pretty good, but just not anytime soon that I'm going to play it.
Okay. Yeah. I hate to be so cheap. I hate to be like, it's 110 decals. But honestly, I've been having so much fun with like these $10, $20 games that I know like the team behind Outlaws, like I know the price tag probably is kind of worth, like I'm not going to get the open world Star Wars experience that looks that good and that has this many options that so many people are saying is like a really great time in like these other games that I'm playing. I think have to have a lot of time to properly get in to Star Wars Outlaws and have a good time though. Whereas, you know, a lot of the indie games that I've been playing, the time to get into the game is, I don't know, like a couple minutes sometimes. I mean, it's a different mind space.
The AAA gaming is just different. They really sell you on a big experience that's going to take a long time, and they take their time with things. And
yeah,
I don't know. Nothing wrong with that, but it's just not really what I'm interested in. And I feel like especially since I've played so many games for so long, I feel like the more interesting things are happening with those smaller games.
Yeah.
There's a lot more.
And of course, multiplayer, you know, multiplayer, mm-hmm. Bobby, famous champion of multiplayer, Robert Digital. Mm-hmm. The first Star Wars Jedi game was Fallen Order, by the way. I don't know why I thought it was Survivor. Survivor was the second one.
Fallen Order. And I couldn't think of that for some reason. Yeah, maybe I should go back and play those games. But what I'm really waiting for is a tactical turn-based game. Super popular format, but no Star Wars game yet. No idea why we don't have that. Still waiting on it.
Those makers of XCOM, they're making a Star Wars game. Like it's been rumored for a while, but we don't know what it's going to be like or any of the specific details, but we can only hope. Are they the makers of XCOM? I have to just double fact check myself before I say that out loud again, but Star Wars strategy.
I do want to suggest one thing that is kind of a Star Wars game. And I've mentioned this before, Pinball FX3. They've got all sorts of DLC, many of it's Star Wars, and it's really good. I don't know if you guys like pinball, but like, I'm not like a huge fan of pinball, but this is like really fun. Just kind of that mindless fun. It's a great way to kill some time. Specifically the Force Awakens DLC. And I think the other ones are just like Star Wars packs, but the best, I don't know what you would call it, a map. Or a machine. The best ones are the Return of the Jedi one, and to a lesser degree, the Boba Fett one. But that's something that I continually go back to from time to time. I always forget about it, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I'll start playing it again. Highly recommend it.
Interesting. Cool. Okay. That Star Wars strategy game was by Respawn, or is by Respawn, which is the same people who make the Jedi Survivors game, but on a separate division under a new company called Bitreactor and led by one of the veteran heads from Firaxis. So the Sid Meier type games and their other strategy titles. So maybe it's a Star Wars grad strategy game. Who knows what they're making? I don't know.
We'll wait and see.
Okay. Well, I mean, that was kind of our lives through Star Wars episodes. I feel like I got to know you a little bit better in a way. I mean, I knew you were into the modding, but I guess I didn't know that was like your cool kind of intro to PC gaming. That's kind of a neat intro. Why you started to use the mouse on the mouse and keyboard. I mean, that's pretty cool, you know?
Mm-hmm. And forever gave up the controller.
Forever gave up the controller and flight stick and any other peripheral. Did you learn anything about me, Bobby?
I think a little bit. Yeah, you shared some interesting stories here. It seems like your aunt, or I guess your uncle, was really into video games, which is cool. I never really had anybody in my family that was into video games, which sounds really strange, but...
That does sound strange. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, both my... It's funny because my uncle was into the games and my auntie was into the movies, or into the books, and she had every book chronologically in universe on her bookshelf. So like she'd be like, oh, the new Jedi Order books are down here because they take place later in the Star Wars universe. And the pre, like the ones from 1,000 years ago, like the Dawn of the Jedi stuff, that's up here. So wherever you want to explore on the Star Wars calendar, Christian, the universe is your. And then we could like talk about it and nerd out about it because she is a huge Star Wars fan. So yeah, neato.
All right. Well, we've got some listener questions, and I think you asked people to give us some Star Wars themed ones, so we've got a few of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this one is not. First one's from Warconius. He says, last episode, Sniper was bragging too much about his chess prowess. Who's going to write a letter to Justin Trudeau revoking his Canadian beaver pelt passport on the grounds of American-like arrogance?
Well, wow. My arrogance has been quickly checked playing Rapid on chess.com. I think my rating, I just won a game. I think it's around 560, 580, which is basically potato tier chess player. But I will say a story that I didn't share about how I got, one of the pieces of how I got back into chess was I was at this party and this guy was playing chess on his phone. Just against the computer. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Do you want to play a game like just on your phone? And he goes, oh, I'm actually pretty good. How good are you? And I go, oh, I used to be kind of decent. Let's play a game. And at that time I had drank an entire 2-6 of whiskey and it was like 2 a.m. Okay. So I was not at my peak opera. I mean, no one was, I think he was pretty drunk too, but we played this game and I eventually win and he's so frustrated. He's like, what are you on chess.com? What are you rated? How did you beat me? And I was like, no, chess.com. I'm not on there. I just used to play quite a bit. And I guess I just got a little bit lucky. And that experience has probably made me think that I'm a little better than I am. And then, you know, the people on chess.com, obviously not drunk, not playing at 2 a.m. They're playing to win. And it's a lot more difficult, but it's still fun. I'm going through, Bobby, all the opening chess moves. On chess.com, they kind of tutorialize you through like all the ideas of chess. And then they give you like a little badge once you've explored or learned a move, which is, I think, a nice way to learn. I was expecting these would be like 10-minute little puzzles. No, Bobby, the Alkine defense was a 45-minute video that I sat and watched about every single variation of the defense and where you would might want to deploy it. And what can happen if you move this piece instead of that piece. And it's super in depth. And I think that's really cool because back in the day when I was growing up, all we had was chess books, which is a much more drier way of learning about chess opening moves. So, yeah.
You know, in my research, I did notice there was a Star Wars chess game. I think it was on the PC in the mid 90s. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Guess who the pawns are?
Pit droids. Oh no, mid-90s. Stormtroopers.
No, stormtroopers for the Empire. Guess who the pawns are for the Rebels?
The Rebels? Yeah. Oh my god, dude.
Guess is who it gonna got be the pawn status?
Celestins, because they're short? I don't know.
No, R2-D2.
That's Rook. R2-D2's the Rook. Who's
the Rook? Rook is Yoda, and I'm like, that's obviously Chewbacca, but no, he's the knight for some reason.
Oh, they really fucked that up.
And 3PO's the bishop. And of course, Luke and Leia are the king and queen, which is incestuous. They did kiss. I mean, yeah. I got some questions about that. But yeah, look it up. Star Wars chess. That's our next Star Wars game.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Next question from Zap. Kathleen Kennedy says you get to retcon and redo the Star Wars sequel trilogy. What's your pitch?
Oh, Jesus, Bobby. Do you have something for this?
Trick question. We're not going to retcon Star Wars. We're making Arachnophobia 2. We're bringing back Jeff Daniels. All right. You thought the spider was dead when he shot it through the thorax with the flaming, what was that, nail gun, I guess. But no, the spider's coming back. What was this question? Redo Star Wars sequel. Sorry, that's a great movie. Have you seen Arachnophobia?
No.
All right. Well, watch it and let me know if I'm way off here. Okay. I don't know how you redo that. Ever since I heard about the new trilogy, I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I like that idea. Like way back in like 2012 when Disney or somewhere around then, when Disney bought LucasArts and they were going to make the new Star Wars, I was like, I don't know if we need a new Star Wars. Like, it's the going back and watching the original trilogy is tough for me because every time I do, I realize how not that great a lot of them are. The first one, I mean, yeah, it's a little rough around the edges. The second one's great, but then the third one's just like, well, I guess we'll just blow up another Death Star. Like, we'll just do what we did in the first movie. I mean, and then that point on, it's just been like, we don't know what we're doing. I have always said that I think the more interesting stories are about the universe and not centered around Luke and Leia and Darth Vader and people being secretly related and stuff like that. And I think they're exploring that more in the TV shows, which is cool, but it's like, I want to watch a movie, not 12 hours of TV or content. So,
right.
I don't know. I'm not sure what direction I would take this. That's a big question.
It's a big question, Zap. My pitch, if I may so humbly say so, is just kind of follow the timeline that's established in the Legends novels after the, you know, you have the Thrawn, era of the like Imperials warlording after their power structure is destroyed at the Battle of Death Star 2. That could be an interesting like Game of Thrones-y kind of kind of movie where it's like very character driven through the different like factions and, you know, you have like this politics in the background. But I think what's more interesting is what happens after, which is the Yuuzhan Vong invasion. And the Yuuzhan Vong are aliens from outside the galaxy. So they don't have any connection to the Force. They are outside the Force, which makes them an interesting thing to study. And the other interesting thing about them is that they don't believe in machinery. They grow all their ships, all their weapons. They are trying to be, I guess, one with nature. So you have these genocidal maniacs from outside the Force. Which sounds bad, but, you know, they don't have the power struggles that the Jedi do. There's not going to be someone that eats a planet. There's not going to be a Palpatine because they don't have this weird power that exists in some of them to, like, choke people with nothing but air, you know? And they take care of the environment. You know, there's no pollution. They're very nature driven. So playing with those themes about how this Earth centered Star Wars universe with, like, you know, very mechanical technology that we understand from like our world today interacts with this outside force that wants to destroy that, and what that kind of means for like the Jedi that we know. Like, why do we need Jedi is kind of like a theme in the books when the Yuuzhan Vong invade. And I think that's kind of a cool thing to play with. So I would do a trilogy of that. I would do the Yuuzhan Vong invasion, focus off of Luke and Leia and the gang, and sort of pick one of the many other cast of characters that you can to tell that story. Like, you know, a Wedge. We love Wedge. Or a Talon Carde, you know? Pick one of those beloved backgroundies. That's my pitch, Bobby. Would you watch those movies?
All right. I just want to back up to Talon Carde. Is there an accent aigu on that E there? You pronounce the E in Talon Card?
I do pronounce the E in Talon Card. And all right, you know,
man. Okay.
Sometimes you only read things that you say them out loud for the first time and people call you out on them. And I think actually you're probably right. So
that's Star Wars in general. Like, everybody like read it or just saw it somewhere, and like hardly anyone ever pronounced these things until, like, you know, now, when there's a lot more communication on the internet. Yeah. So nobody knows how to pronounce these things. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for this. I wish they wouldn't have done like a complete reset, like, and then like the whole bad guys are in power again. You know, the Empire is now.
That was rough, dude.
What is it in the new ones? The First Order?
First Order.
Yeah. So the Empire is the First Order. The Rebels are now the, I don't know. They got another name, but it's basically the same exact thing. And
just told in a worse way. It's like the same series told, except, okay, the Rian Johnson episode, what is it, 8? People give that guy hate. I get the hate, but I feel like he just wanted to tell a story in the Star Wars universe. And he just happened to be put into this weird ass fucking trilogy that was trying to retell the story. And I think with those confines, he did a pretty good job. But I would love to see like a Rian Johnson spinoff movie about like war profiteers or whatever he was trying to get across in episode 8.
Yeah. All right, next question from Days. Since Bobby loves story and role-playing so much, this is for both of you. Is there any story in the Star Wars universe that you'd actually like to see turned into a story-driven role-playing game? What about a dating sim?
Like a top-down Baldur's Gate sort of exploration? Okay. A story-driven role-playing game. Maybe the Han Solo trilogy that I was talking about earlier. I think that could be an interesting one. Different conversation pieces. You would play probably as Han Solo, and you would have all these different, like, choose your own adventure choices where it's like, do you leave the Empire to save Chewbacca? Do you decide to run Spice on Nar Shaddaa and connect with the underworld? Or do you decide to do something else? There's a lot to explore there. That's my answer. Yeah.
You know what I've noticed is a lot of these newer Star Wars games, they make new characters. They don't take a lot, at least for main characters. So you look at Jedi Fallen Order, Jedi Survivor, they've got a whole new character that's built around. Star Wars Outlaws, new character. The Battlefront games, new character. They aren't saying like, hey, let's take that guy in the background of the Mos Eisley Cantina and make a whole game about him or something. And I feel like people would really geek out about stuff like that. A lot of interesting characters in that bar, you know? Where's our RPG with the Tonika sisters?
Yeah, that's what we're missing.
Or do you call them the Tonika sisters?
Probably, dude. I don't even want to say anything out loud anymore. I don't know. Yeah. All right, cool.
Okay. Next question from Controlled Pairs. Fondest Star Wars Galaxies memory?
Oh, man. We had this mall and the city of Talath on Rory. Now, you can name your own player cities. And we had this tavern called Tavern on the Green. And right across from it, we had this galactic mall that Rory was kind of a out of the way planet. It didn't have a lot going for it as far as like farmable resources or, you know, content that you could complete at that time in the pre-CU. But we did have this awesome player mall. And so people would actually pay the travel ticket to go from Naboo to Rory, which is the only way you could get to Rory, and visit our mall. And we would we as people would like hawk at the mall. So there was like the vendors, the player owned vendors inside the mall for like the rich people. And then us poor scout pistolier artisans would hang out inside the mall and outside and basically like accost people into like buying stuff from us directly and not the people in the mall. And I feel like just had lots of cool interactions that way. And that's maybe one of my most fond memories. Yeah.
A lot of memories in that game.
Lots of memories, Bobby. Yeah. I was a little disappointed that that game didn't take to you, Bob, or opposite. You didn't quite take to that game many years later. Is there a main, was the reason that it just wasn't WoW and that's what you've known for so long that that's kind of what you're looking for?
Yeah, there were some cool things about it. But yeah, I think it always comes down to it's just not WoW. I mean, that's where all my fond memories are.
Yeah.
There's a big attachment to that game.
All right.
All right. Final question from Warconius. What would you make for dinner if you invited Sniper or Robert Digital over for a romantic date? Would you choose, what would you choose as mood music?
So I think I know what I would do. I would make, Bobby, I would make you a burrito with potatoes. I feel like apparently those are hard to come by in your neck of the woods these days. And music, that's, we're thinking the wrong thing. I think we need to set a mood movie. And I would just look at what you rated last on Letterboxd as like 1 or 2 stars. And I would play that because that would get you talking and then the date would go great. You know, probably I couldn't even get you to shut up. Like you would just keep talking about it. So, yeah.
Ooh, I don't know, man. I can't remember the last thing I rated one or two stars. If you look at my reviews on Letterboxd, it's like a perfect histogram, dude. Like 2.5 right in the middle, most common, and then it all just kind of slopes down from there with the standard deviation, if you will. So I don't really rate a lot of stuff really bad or really good. But yeah, I don't know. You might get... I'd probably talk more about a good movie. I don't know. What's something Canadian that I could play for you? Like some Michael Bublé. He's Canadian, right?
Michael Bublé is Canadian. He's one of us.
He must love be. That. Okay. I couldn't name a single song that he sings. But dinner, I mean, I don't cook, so we'd be getting takeout somewhere. Okay. How do you feel about seafood?
I love seafood. You know what? That's the worst part about living in a landlocked province. You see all these restaurants that go fresh seafood and you go, how? The nearest ocean is a 15-hour drive. What are you talking about? Fresh seafood. Obviously, that's on a truck. Yeah. So I think I feel good about seafood, but I haven't tried a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Seafood or maybe some sushi. I think that would be... I don't know. It depends on where we are. If we're in San Diego, maybe some Mexican food.
Nice. I do love my Mexican food. Bobby, I know the movie I'd choose, by the way. The Apple Dumpling Gang, rated 2 stars.
Digital. All right. Yeah. So I've been on a Don Knotts run recently. I'm working my way up to The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, which we all know is the best Don Knotts film. But
a bunch of words I don't know. Don Knotts? What?
You don't know the chicken Don who? Knotts is? Oh, boy.
Don right. Knotts what? What is he not? I don't get it.
Oh, my God. This guy.
This fucking guy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he wasn't in any Star Wars movies.
Okay, so, yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's an episode. Back to our usual programming next week. But I don't think we're playing Star Wars Outlaws this week. But what are we playing this week?
Oh, man. So I've been trying out Atomic Drift. That's the Asteroids roguelite, like the modern day take on Asteroids that Emilio talked about last week. I've been playing that and really liking it. That game is also called Nova Drift. I don't know what I said, but it's not that. I think I got a gift in my inventory from our very own Biblioclasm. He says, I need help with this. Please help. And the game is called Dale and Dawson Stationary Supplies, where you play as a manager, specialist, or slacker in an office setting. Slackers blend in, mimicking specialists to avoid the manager's suspicion. Uncover or cause deception to win. Sounds like a social deduction game, so maybe I'll be playing that.
Okay. I've been playing a lot of Deep Rock Galactic Survivor. I'm going to try to pull myself away from that and play some more Deadlock, which I've been playing. I've got some notes. All right. I've
for
got
Deadlock?
Some opinions on that game. Yeah.
Okay. That's exciting.
But I want to play it a little bit more. So I just am a little more confident in my opinions next week.
Got it.
And then who knows what else? Maybe some Star Wars pinball and Star Wars chess.
That sounds great. That sounds hit up for Star Wars chess. Can't wait to deploy those Yodas, dude. And fucking ridiculous. Okay, that's an episode. May the force be with you, titties. I mean, I think that's as good as it's going to get, right?
Yep.